Welcome, everyone, to a great edition of Talking Tigs. This is Scott Girard. Joining me, as always, Tommy Johnson, Daniel Zollinger. We have our post-baseball season wrap-up show for you this week. Great effort by the Tigers. I don't think anyone thought we were going to go this far a lot earlier in the season, but Tigers took it as far as they could, which was unfortunately probably just a couple runs or a couple outs, either way you want to look at it, away from hosting a super regional. As it were, though, the Tigers lost to North Carolina last night, 4-3. We'll go into that and just the postseason in general and what to look forward to, as well as anything else that's news or noteworthy that's going on with the LSU sports program. But before we get into that, I want to see how you guys are doing. Hope you had a good weekend nonetheless. I mean, it was pretty much good until the top of the ninth in the game last night. It was a great weekend.
Yeah, good to be with you. Good to be talking LSU. Obviously not the result we wanted, but I mean, after, you know, what we're going on basically 24 hours of since that first pitch. And, you know, I think that this team really outplayed themselves, exceeded late season expectations. And so, yeah, we'll break it down, but it's good to be here with you.
Yes, hello, everyone. Certainly enjoyed getting a jam-packed weekend of LSU baseball. Those games had me and I think everyone else on the edge of their seat for about 99% of the time. If anyone wants to tell you that baseball is boring, you can direct them to the Chapel Hill Regional and LSU baseball in general, because they had that thing cooking for better or worse the entire weekend. But it made some good viewing and hopefully some good podcasting material here. So we'll break down the Tigers' ultimate end to this season.
And it had everything. It had kind of like what we saw last year in our run up to the national championship. It had great hitting, especially when we needed it. Great pitching, definitely when we needed it, from people we didn't expect. This year, I would say it came in the form of Will Helmers throwing a lot of great innings yesterday and the day before, Griffin Herring. So just two guys that, you know, we've seen Herring, but usually in closing situations. Hadn't seen much of Helmers, but, you know, as we said last week, Tommy probably will. He's going to see him in some of those alumni functions at the business school. So you can definitely give him our kudos. We're happy to have him on anytime, by the way. But amazing from him. Too bad the bats just were asleep the whole time he was playing all that great shutout pitching. I mean, I think we had, what, one hit after the third inning until we were trying to tie it up in the ninth and tenth. So I don't know. It looked like it was going to be a disaster in that first inning. They got the first three guys on, no outs, but, you know, LSU shut it down and nipped it in the bud and got some offense of their own. We just didn't really do much after that. Not that we needed to because of senior Helmers, but as it showed in the end, we definitely could have used another insurance run or three. I don't know. I mean, you could nitpick on why it didn't happen, but I was actually kind of surprised the Tigers held it to 3-2 for the rest of the game, because North Carolina's really good. They're really good offensively, and they definitely have the home field advantage. It's just interesting. We started the tournament 4-3, ended up losing this one 3-4. So I guess inverse proportions there. But yeah, like I said, we were all surprised to see this far. But what a ride they took us on, right? Just with the freshmen we have stepping up. Milam, you know, I think we're mostly in this position a lot because of Milam. He helped us defeat some teams in the, you know, he had a couple walk-offs, right? One against one against South Carolina. He also had one against Wofford. So what else can you say? The guy's going to be really good next year because he's already good. Just remains to be seen who all we're going to have around with him. I think it's still kind of too early. The portal is open, by the way, for baseball, but I guess that's the one bright spot is Jay Johnson has some time to exhale and hit the portal before the teams that are still playing do, right?
Yeah, and I think that he will definitely be hitting the portal. And I mean, you talk about the past 2 weeks for LSU baseball. I mean, that team looks like it could have, you know, won in Omaha. That's how good we've been playing. I think that's a testament to Jay Johnson. The tweaks he made, like you said, Scott, the freshman coming in. I mean, those moves, you know, come from the manager. I'm very impressed with the way he managed that team all the way to, you know, almost backdooring a super regional host site. I agree. I think that, you would have liked to see maybe some more offensive production last night. But I mean, when you think about I actually think that game we lost is the perfect, that is our team for this year. A lot of talent, a lot of unexpected things, but just not elite to be able to get it done. And that's not a knock. I mean, we won the national championship last year. We lost a ton of talent. We had a really rough, you know, middle of the year in the toughest conference in America. So the odds were stacked against us. The way that team really came together and responded through the SEC tournament and then through that regional, there's a lot to be proud of. There's a lot to be excited for, I think, next year, especially, and I think he will, if Jay Johnson goes and pulls some major talent out of the portal.
Yep. And going into the regional against North Carolina, we mentioned last week on the pod that UNC was not pleased when LSU was announced as the number two seed in their regional. And they were right to be a little bit scared considering how hot we had been in the last couple of weeks of the regular season and then making the runner-up in the SEC tournament to the number one team in the country, Tennessee. So expectations were high and we were ready to roll going into Chapel Hill. I guess I'll give a couple quick cliff notes on each of the games as we went along. And that first game coming against Wofford, we started our ace gauge jump and it didn't go quite so well immediately. Wofford went up 2-0 and then LSU battled back in the end thanks to four solo shot home runs, which is a signature mark of this past season, ultimately ending in the Milam walk-off home run in the ninth. So that was a stressful one right off the bat. We're like, okay, Wofford's here to play, but we squeeze it out. We're ready for the next game in the winner's bracket against North Carolina, who had to walk off themselves against Long Island just to face us. But yeah, that game, Luke Holman, he had a pretty good outing against UNC, gave up three runs over seven innings. Maybe Jay Johnson left him in a little bit too long at the end and UNC pulled away. But that was a similar one to the last game when we just couldn't quite get the bats rolling in any sort of consecutive fashion where we get a guy on base here or there, but couldn't bring him around and manufacture a run when we need to. So that was kind of a wash and an unfortunate loss. So that set the stage for needing to win three games in a row in the loser's bracket, coming up against Wofford again. And that one, the usual stuff, Tigers having to come from behind as Wofford put up a five spot in the first inning. And I thought it was about over right then and there. But thankfully, LSU battled back and just continued to get hits, piling up 21 hits over the course of that game. That one kind of reminded me of the championship game against Florida, the last game of last year, where we went down 2-0 early and then it was just off to the races. So that was easily, the best game that we played, and an example of what we could have done this whole year when everybody's on the same page and kind of turning the lineup over. And that was where Griffin Herring got his stuff going, throwing over six innings, and he had been our best reliever all season, and he proved why in that game against Wofford. Then it was back to UNC. Got to win two in a row. First game, I texted afterwards. It was probably the closest four-run game I've ever seen because LSU was hot early. We were the ones out 8-1. And then North Carolina was scratching back. They got a few runs. And then I think over the last four innings, they stranded, I think, two or more base runners every single inning. It was constantly just we would work ourselves into a jam and then get out of it. After Thatcher Hurd, he made an unexpected appearance, throwing five innings, looking like his postseason self. And then all the relievers after that, Anderson and Guidry, kind of thankfully clutched up to send us to the last game. And then that was at that point we were kind of out of gas. I questioned the decision to start Sam Dutton right at the start, and then he gave up three hits and two runs, and we were lucky to get out of there with only two on the scoreboard. And then after that, it was Helmers and his
big Helmers went in and pitched like a warrior.
And yeah, he hadn't pitched really that much this season, but he answered the call when it came. It was just a little too late. I mean, the other games we had found a way to win, but this was the hallmark, like you said, Tommy, of the season where we just kind of found a way to lose at the very end, up 3-2 going into the ninth inning. Ackenhausen had just struck out the side, although he was a little bit erratic. And that was probably the biggest coach's decision, I think, of the series, where Jay Johnson decided to pull Ackenhausen and put in Gage Jump off of 2 days rest. And he didn't pitch badly, but he gave up a run, which is what you could not do. Kind of no thanks to Jake Brown dropping it wasn't a routine pop fly, but it's one you got to have in that situation. And that was kind of all she wrote. You kind of knew we were going to lose after that. So
if we're going to talk about individual plays of you can't put this on anybody, but also I will say, did anybody else kind of feel like that? Like, there should have been more of a play at the plate with that hit, that fly ball to left field. Like, I'm not expecting Josh Pearson to catch that. I know that, like, it's going to drop. But it seemed like, I don't know if he didn't see it off the bat or what, but it just seemed like he just kind of jogged over there, threw it in, where, I mean, if he'd been on his high horse, I feel like we should have at least had a throwdown.
Maybe. The ball kind of hung in the air for a little bit, and he did look like he kind of stared at it for a second, and then it just dropped into the gap, and they had a speedy runner on second base, and he was already turning the wheels around third. But yeah, that was pretty sad. And then the guy who hit the double slash possible error by Jake Brown, he had checked his swing earlier in the at-bat with a real close check swing that would have been strike three, and possibly none of that would have happened, but the ump didn't call it. And then it was over after that. But it was a game of inches, and we had a chance to win at bottom of the ninth, tie game, and we couldn't put up a run with our 1-2-3. So that's when you needed your guys to come in clutch, but they couldn't. So maybe we just didn't deserve to win. And credit to UNC, they played well. Their infield defense was just swallowing up basically every single hit.
They had Tommy Tanks's number. That third baseman, I mean, was all over almost every one of his hits.
Yeah, and Tommy he's got robbed from a couple home runs.
Yep.
I mean, not how he wanted to go out, but man, what a career. I mean, he technically could come back, but I mean, come on.
I did hear there was this is like a rumor. I have no confirmation of this. But I mean, it's almost like when he was Devin White's junior year. Everyone was like, yeah, he's gone. And then there were rumors that, like, hey, he kind of wants to stay. He actually really likes it here. Maybe he wants, he just wants that senior year experience. So I have heard that. I think it's going to happen? No. I mean, let's just be honest. But I mean, I think there's more of a chance than you might think. Yeah. If you would, most people would say, oh, there's a 0% chance. I think there's like a 5% chance now.
he's tied for ninth all time on college home runs list, which is kind of crazy, joining two other Tigers, Eddie Furness and Brad Cressy. And he's 26 off the or 27 off the pure lead. So if he came back, it's not impossible he could finish with the most home runs in college all time, which would be kind of wild.
That could be worth it. That by itself, pretty sure he could come pretty close. I know he'd take over the LSU record, because I think he's one of, if not the only person to have that amount, like 20 something home runs in each of his first three seasons, hitting 27 as a freshman is just unheard of. But we know he definitely has at least 20 more in him if he did, but imagine that selling point for Jay Johnson. Like, hey, no one knows this yet, but Tommy Tanks is actually sticking around. So if you want to hop on that lineup, now's the time.
That would be something.
Yeah. And just speaking of, and we can talk about, the portal itself, because I know that's going to be a hot issue for LSU, especially since South Carolina actually fired their coach. I think a couple guys have already stated their interest in leaving. But just to recap, what else was going on? Had LSU, advanced past North Carolina, they would have faced West Virginia, who is in their first super regional in program history. They got their first regional win this past weekend. But UNC is going to face West Virginia. You got Kentucky in Oregon State, Tennessee in Evansville. You got UGA in North Carolina State. FSU playing UConn. Welcome to the party. They beat Oklahoma, so that was interesting. Then you have Virginia and Kansas State. Then you have Clemson in Florida. A&M will be hosting Oregon. So there's still five SEC teams. Could have been six, which the way it works out, I think there would have been three in each bracket. Like if LSU would have advanced, there's four teams that pair up in the College World Series, and then the other four of the Super Regionals all pair up. And either way, it probably would have been three SEC teams on each side, which is just bonkers. But
yeah,
as it stands now, I'd say a pretty good field. Obviously, we're completely objective. I could pull for the Bulldogs. I have a good reason to cheer for them. Do I think they do it? I don't know. Probably not. Like, I feel like they could get to Omaha, but I feel like Tennessee and Kentucky, probably North Carolina. FSU's look pretty good this year also. I think Clemson's got a real good chance. Florida is tough, obviously. I mean, they played us last year for the title, so but Clemson's hosting that one. And then A&M, who's been quiet, I know they were number one earlier this year, but I don't know. We beat them. I mean, they were out early in the SEC tournament. I don't know. Maybe they just quietly win it.
Well, Florida snuck into the tournament. They were like the last one in, I think, with only one game over 500 or something in the regular season. Yeah. A lot of people saying they shouldn't have made it. And now they're sitting in the Super Regional kind of on the back of Jack Caglione and defending national runner-up. So they definitely got the pop. LSU was close, but no cigar. I don't think that we had any sort of embarrassing performance against UNC, the number four team. But yeah, kind of sad for Arkansas. They seem to be cursed, losing to Southeast Missouri State at home to be eliminated. That's kind of tough for a team that was definitely hoping to compete for a national championship at the start. And yeah, Tennessee's looked very solid, number one. So I wouldn't be surprised if they continue to rock and roll.
Yeah. I mean, it might just be recency bias for me, but North Carolina looks good.
Mm-hmm. They're hitting top to bottom is very solid, and they play good defense.
And that Honeycutt guy, I mean, I was joking with y'all. I'm like, why do they keep talking about this guy? He really, I mean, after watching him for, four games, because I watched some of the, I watched him play in some of the other games. He's about as good as advertised. Sure. So he's cool, and he's fun to watch. I mean, whenever you got a five tool center fielder, that's always great. We were lucky to have one for the past three years. So, I think their pitching is probably the only thing that, I don't think their pitching is elite, but it's not bad. I mean, they were able to handle our lineup pretty well.
Shut us down for seven innings yesterday.
Yeah.
Seven straight innings, I should say. Mm-hmm. And that first game they had us too. So, yeah, I don't know. It was just something about that guy, Matthias, however you say his name, and then the guy after that we didn't have any luck against in that first game against him. I think just like us, they probably had enough to get through, at least to the next level. Now, when you get to the Super Regional, you only got to worry about, it's like your regular three-game series. That's all you got to worry about. So, once you get to Omaha, it kind of goes back to the regionals, and it's just all hands on deck after, those first two, three games. So, we could have overachieved even more, but, going through Omaha, different story. Could we have done it? Possibly. But we don't have to go into all the what ifs, but, I was going to talk about the transfer portal, which is still what ifs, but luckily Jay Johnson has some time to approach that, because we're going to have arms to replace. We're going to have bats to replace, especially if Tommy Tanks goes. So the thing with South Carolina that's interesting, I know there's already a couple guys that have entered the portal, a couple pitchers, one who I think could be a good pickup for us, Austin Williamson. He's had a lot of, well, he appeared in 18 games as a freshman. And I don't know, I heard Ethan Petrie might be considering transferring. Like, if we picked up somebody like that, I mean, that guy's a hit machine.
Yeah.
That would be something awesome. There's a lot of other names in the portal, but I think if LSU could get like a big hitter, like a, just going to toss out some names here, like a Logan Maxwell out of TCU, just the name alone, a Gavin Klein out of Louisville. How about this? Gavin Cash, Texas Tech. Guy is the, he had 26 home runs last year. So I think he's the type of hitter we could use at LSU. Not to keep hitting solo shots, but I don't know. I mean, it kind of played out to where, you know, we didn't really have a Cade Beloso, but, you know, Josh Pearson showed up later on, you know, just took a little ribbon from Tommy. Jake Brown hit a solo home run. I don't care about the drop ball. That's going to happen. Probably won't happen next year. It wouldn't have happened last year, but it's just one of those things. I mean, his home run was why we were playing until the ninth inning and the 10th inning.
Yeah.
You know, there's, I don't know if you guys know of any other names out there, but there's a lot of opportunity here, and I trust in Jay.
It's all. I think that this season is really proved how good Jay Johnson is. And that's not even like me trying to say like, oh, I'm some great analyst. I mean, I had doubts in the middle of the season. I was like, man, I don't know what's going, you know, we raised a question on this podcast about, is this like 2019? Is this like Coach O? Clearly not. Just from a coaching standpoint and from a managing standpoint, you know, the way that he was able to, you know, maneuver this roster. And I heard a story. I think they said it during one of the broadcasts where, when LSU was kind of in the depths of, you know, just playing terrible ball, he called in like every player and was like, what do you need from us to, meaning the coaches, like, what do you need from the coaching staff in this program to be the best player you can possibly be? And they, you know, and the player said whatever. He was like, and okay, then I want you to make a commitment. What are you going to do to hold up your end of the bargain? You know, are you going to, like, how are you going to make a change? Because something needs to change. I thought that was a really cool, you know, story I hadn't heard before, before they said that. And obviously it worked. I mean, you know, we joke about the cell phones, like when he took away the cell phones on game day or whatever, and how that, you know, did it work for two games. Yeah. You know, did they have cell phones during the SEC tournament? I don't know. But overall, I think it was a very impressive way to turn around a team that, man, had a very, very, very tough regular season.
Mm-hmm.
Just not good.
Yeah. And back to your point about the transfer portal, Scott, I think you kind of touched on some of these, but I think the main one that Jay Johnson needs to go and try and find is a weekend starter, preferably Friday, Saturday guy who has Power 5 starting experience, a lot like Luke Holman last year. He was kind of Alabama's ace, and we got him to defect and come to LSU. I think that's big because they have the experience kind of in those primetime moments already, even if he's only coming for 1 year, kind of like Luke Holman. But we saw a similar guy. We were talking about him last year on the podcast, Justin Lohr, who was like a starter for Xavier, and he transferred to us, and he could barely make his way out of the bullpen. And every time he did, it seemed like an automatic walk. So not to hate on him too much, but there's a little bit of split between like SEC weekend starter experience and then kind of some mid-major to more diamond in the rough type finds. And then after that, yeah, definitely a home run hitter, considering Jay Johnson's history of liking Powerball, liking the long ball, and our two big guys in the home run department, roll three, really, in terms of Tommy White, Jared Jones, and Hayden Dravinsky will all be gone, unless Jared Jones decided to stay around for his third year. But I don't know, he kind of elevated his draft stock a lot this year, I would say. He actually led the Tigers in on-base percentage by a significant margin. I was kind of surprised. I was looking at the stats. He was like 450 or something because he drew a lot of walks. He struck out a lot, but you saw that in the SEC or the regional too, where he was kind of like a good watching the ball, had a couple home runs. He struck out a few times, but he drew walks too. And yeah, so we're going to need some power to replace them. I don't really know any names off the top of my head. I haven't scoured the boards across the country, but they've got interns and analysts who do that. Some grad students have a spreadsheet somewhere of all these guys. So hopefully we were able to go and use the LSU brand name and NIL money if it's there, if somebody wants to open their checkbook to get these guys down to Baton Rouge.
I agree. I just wish that for me, I think that you're right. Getting a real ace arm is priority number one, but I would say 1B. I want, if I could have anybody, if I could pick anybody, I don't have a name, but a dominant reliever. That's what I think. That's really what separates. If we could have a closer that we could rely on, you know, I mean, like if we had a closer last night, we win that game.
Like a Zach Hess or a Chris Cotton, where somewhere just comes in and throws gas that nobody can hit.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't even have one last year, to be honest. We kind of got away with just having better than everybody at every other position. And then by the time, you know, it was time to close out the game, we'd already, you know, we'd run up the score so much. And they were just tired of trying to hit against Skeens, so they didn't even want to hit anymore. But I mean, that is really where I think you can make up the difference. And if we had a ice in their veins, you know, serial killer type reliever who could come in and pitch one or two innings of just lights out ball, you know, I think that really would make the difference. And I think that would cover up for a lot of, offensive issues and, you know, starting pitching issues.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
But of course it's really hard to find in college baseball. So
yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we still have a top rated recruiting class coming in, or one of the top rated recruiting classes, and look who, you know, kind of stepped up for it this year. We had Monster Milam. You had Jake Brown. You had, I'm sorry, I'm blanking already.
Ashton Larson played
Ashton
well.
Ashton Larson.
Yeah. The guys like Cade Anderson, Brady Neal. Yeah. Who, you know, Milazzo is going to be gone. So you're going to need somebody solid behind the plate. Travinsky's gone too. That's two catchers right there. So let's look. It'll be interesting to see which freshmen are coming in that could step up in the exact same way. Guys, we don't even know yet. You know, it's like you've said before, what they do in high school is completely different, or what they did at some mid-major before us is completely different in the SEC. You know, that's why we're lucky to get somebody like Luke Holman to just kind of transfer over. Guy's done great. Hopefully there's somebody else like that. Maybe they're still playing. Maybe they're not. We'll see. But I think that was about it on baseball. But I agree with you, Tommy. I think no matter what the case is, we're lucky to have Jay Johnson, the guy that's obviously somebody the players love to play for. They respect him, guy that loves his players, and just he loved the program. That's why he came here. And he already delivered enough, I'd say, in his first few years. I think we can put to rest the hot seat talk, at least for now, right?
Yeah, I think that's safe to say.
Okay. You know, we'll give him 6 months. And then
he's on probation.
But as soon as LSU loses their first game in 2025, the recruiting boards are fired back up. The fire emojis will be in the chat.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, it's all good. LSU is going to be great next year. We're going to have Texas and Oklahoma joining the league, so should be interesting. Now, other than that, I think the only thing that we kind of had that was going on is LSU had some football recruiting tidbits, official visits, things like that. I don't know, Dan, you want to take that toss dive and head forward with it?
Yeah, I'll give some abbreviated notes on that one. But yeah, it was a big weekend for the LSU football recruiting. kind of the late spring high schoolers are finished with their classes. They're on summer break. They're ready to get these visits locked in before the fall season. And so LSU had a lot of top targets from around the country in Baton Rouge in-house. They really rolled out the red carpet. And then a lot of these guys had very positive things to say about LSU. They even had LSU legend Patrick Peterson on campus for some of these visits. And I'm sure that made a good impression because they had DJ Pickett, who's the number one corner in the country, and Dorian Brew, who's the number four corner in the country. So two of the top five DBs there, and both of them were very pleased with their visits from what people are saying, as well as some other guys, wide receivers Khalik Lockett and Jamie French, and then offensive lineman Solomon Thomas, who's a five-star committed to Florida State, but some people are thinking he might drift back towards the Tigers. And then it did pay some dividends already, as some other guys like Damian Shanklin, who's an edge rusher, four-star, number one player in the state of Indiana, has already been predicted to commit to LSU after this weekend, and then a few others. So Brian Kelly definitely taking his offseason in stride and getting those fired up for the 2025 class, I should say. This is still a ways away, and anything can happen. But it's good that these guys are at least interested in coming to LSU and seeing what we have to offer in the Bayou.
Mm-hmm. We'll be happy to welcome them down.
I think this will be the first test of Corey Raymond as the returning cornerbacks coach.
Mm-hmm.
That a hallmark of his tenure at LSU was the recruiting aspect of DBU. You know, people can argue about whether or not he's actually a real, genius secondary coach. But it's undoubted that he was a great recruiter of DBs. And from the time he was there, I mean, we had some of the best defensive backs in the country come through LSU. I don't think he had that same kind of success at Florida. Obviously, I mean, he's no longer there anymore. I want to see, let's see, can we pull some of these guys?
I don't know. And one other note from this is that basically these guys are spread all across the country, from Texas to Florida to the Northeast, like Indiana. And so far the 2025 class has been very Louisiana centric, I would say, except for our crown jewel Bryce Underwood, who's from Michigan. But maybe Kelly's looking to try and cast a little bit of a wider net, which has been both positive and negative in the past. You think of Ed Orgeron trying to go across the country, but you kind of have to have a national approach in college football these days, just because of the way guys are constantly flipping back and forth, and you can't really isolate yourself in one talent hotbed. But I hope this shakes out in a positive way for LSU with some commitments incoming over the next couple months.
Yeah, I mean, this would be the first. Let's say we pick up one of these DBs. That'd be one of the first like top 10 nationally ranked defensive backs we've had since Eli, right? Eli Ricks?
Yeah, it was pretty much Stingley and then Ricks, and then there had a few down years there.
Maybe, what was that guy's name? Toviano. I think he was highly rated. He wasn't Ricks, he wasn't Stingley.
Yeah, we've kind of had the revolving door of transfer cornerbacks the past few years.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. We had the guy from Nichols. We had Pig. Remember Pig? Pig Cage.
Mm-hmm.
We had a guy from Ohio State.
A guy from Oklahoma State.
Not DJ Banks. What was the Banks guy?
Seven Banks.
Seven Banks, yeah.
Denver Harris, the other head case from A&M.
Oh, that's probably right. I guess you'd have to count, because wasn't Denver Harris one time like the number one rated player in the whole country when he went to A&M?
Yeah, and then he kind of worked against himself a little bit.
Yeah, he was never any good. Seven Banks. I don't even know if Seven Banks made it on the field.
He played seven snaps.
Right. Speaking of someone that never played any snaps, but feels like he still has to get paid for it. You guys saw that story out of Florida where the players suing Billy Napier for like
13, I don't understand that.
$13 million. $13 million.
What is he suing him for?
NIL money that was promised to him, I guess. Because he signed and they were supposed to give him, I guess, something.
In advance.
Yeah. Didn't happen, or he transferred. So he transferred and No, yeah, I don't know.
It's just stupid. No, I mean, I don't know. I don't. I've seen it as much as like the headlines. I've read like a couple paragraphs. I do not know the situation very in depth. This is obviously not a Florida podcast,
right?
I would say, I mean, you would think there's a 99% chance that this guy's just a moron, and that these lawyers drafted this, you know, this NIL agreement, and it had some sort of performance guarantee where it's like you have to be at the school to be guaranteed this money. But I do think that this is a symptom of this is what the world wanted, right? You know, like,
want to get paid.
Yeah. Okay. We'll pay them. Well, now you got, you know,
payment disputes,
people having disputes over whether or not they should have, you know, be paid for never even attending the school.
Yeah. I can't wait till there's some player on the sideline, like waiting to lace up his shoes. He's looking at the coach and he's looking at his phone like, transfer ain't gone through yet, coach.
Oh,
I'm not crossing this. I'm not tying up. I'm not lacing up. I'm not crossing the line until I see it go through.
I think that will happen. I think that you will see, I don't know about like during a regular season game, but a bowl game for sure, there will be some sort of dispute where the guy will be like, oh, like I want, you know, more money. I want another NIL deal to play in this bowl game. And they'll say no. And then he won't play because of it. We might never find out because of, you know, cause they'll say it's a personal decision or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that is the world we're living in now, whether we like it or not. It truly is a, and then, I mean, with the recent decision to like actually pay the players, like to allow colleges to have like payroll, mm-hmm. Which
next step.
I mean, it's a brave new world. I don't know if we're going to recognize the college football we love in the next couple of years, but
I mean, I know it's already changed.
It's already moved so fast, which is scary. I mean,
I know we're going to have pods for crying out loud in the Southeastern Conference. Who saw us there? We're going to have Texas and Oklahoma in the Southeastern Conference. USC, UCLA is going to be in the Big Ten.
Even for the life of, can you imagine if we could go back, if the three of us could go back and be guests on our own podcast, like one of the first ones. Yeah. One of the first ones we were like, all right, here, we're going to tell you the future. LSU is going to win the national championship and be the greatest college football team ever to step on a field. Then we're going to have one of the worst seasons ever. Then the SEC is going to totally break apart. The Pac-12 will not exist. The Big 12 basically won't exist. Stanford will play in the same conference as Ohio State, and Texas and Oklahoma are going to be in your conference. Like,
right. Oh, by the way, there is a pandemic, so there was a shortened season for that worst season ever. So it wasn't just us, but God, is it horrible. But the SEC led the way. We actually played our season. Who'd have bought all that? Right? Nobody.
Yeah.
And you could have told
them. Saban will retire.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Who'd have thunk? Similar news. Well, someone that's definitely not going to have to sue his former coach just because he doesn't need the money, that would be Justin Jefferson. Boy got paid by the Minnesota Vikings, getting him. I guess they want to lock him up. Guy's been producing, though. You can't argue there's anybody that's not producing, you know, as much as Justin Jefferson. He got himself a four-year, $140 million contract, 110 guaranteed. Have yourself a career. My goodness. It's a lot of money.
A lot of money.
I guess, he earned it. He was rookie of the year and set the NFL record for most receiving yards over the first four years of a career with over 5,000 yards. He's been over 1,000 every single season. So if he keeps putting numbers up like that, then the Vikings will say it's worth every penny. Fans may question a little bit. I mean, yeah, he's probably the number one receiver in the league, but you kind of cripple
who's
your
gonna,
own.
Who's going to be throwing to him again?
Yeah, it's
not Kirk Cousins.
Yeah,
it's going to be a combination of Sam Darnold and I forget who the other quarterback on the roster is, but not good. Hopefully, he'll have to get really open. But yeah, and then he's hurting their own salary cap options to get a quarterback, which you got to pay them a gazillion dollars to, and whoever else. But at least he's making his money. He can get more iced out grills now.
Was Teddy Bridgewater still there? I know he was there. He was their backup. Oh no, it's Dobbs, Joshua Dobbs. That's who I'm thinking of.
He actually had a few good games when he went in.
The new quarterback is J.J. McCarthy, who just got drafted to the Vikings. Who may or may not even be able to throw the ball at all. At least he's got Justin Jefferson to throw to, but it can be a tall task. Can he not
throw or something? His arms?
Well, I'm just talking about like the Michigan offense where he would be like 8 for 9 like on the game or something.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever actually seen him throw the ball before, now that you mention it. Blake Corum really ran that offense for him. But good for Justin. I just hope that Jordan gets a little something on the side.
Jordan Jefferson, yeah.
Yeah, I hope Jordan gets to reap a little bit of that. Because that poor guy. I heard he was actually a pretty nice guy, but kind of got a bad rap with that whole fight thing.
Yeah, and winner number two in this is Mr. Scott Woodward, who gets to fire up the NILSU printing press again and get his interns to make some more graphics about how much money they're making now that they have the highest paid player in the league with Joe Burrow and the highest paid non-quarterback with Justin Jefferson. So, I mean, it's definitely a good selling point to recruits. Like, we can make you all the money you want. You can buy your mama 5 houses if you want. Just come down and play for us.
You know who's another winner? Ja'Marr Chase. Because he'll come up for a contract year in a little bit, and he'll say, "Hey, that guy up there in the purple. I mean, I'm about as good as he is." So
that maybe because there were some rumors that the Bengals were trying to get Justin Jefferson. I guess this is why they couldn't get him. Now they couldn't cough up $140 million. But Ja'Marr is going to be asking for some too.
Yeah. So in closing, it's good to be an LSU wide receiver. You're going to do fine financially.
Yeah, wide receiver you, as we'd like to
see. Unless you're Kayshon. Kayshon will not do fine financially.
I mean, even if he's making the league minimum, come on, that's...
He had turned to FanDuel for his paychecks.
I think
at least a half a mil.
But isn't he going to be making like the minimum at Angola? I thought he was going to do hard time for that. Maybe he got out of it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. He probably has beats on a lawyer. I mean, he can talk to Gordon, right? Can't Gordon help him?
He already got Gordon at one time, or Gordon got him, so he should be able to get Gordon.
Right. Anywho, I think that was about it, unless you guys saw something else.
No, I think that's it. Take a breather to our listeners after baseball. Enjoy the summer. We might be on a bi-weekly schedule now, taking our own breather, kind of in the podcasting off season, so to speak. We're getting ready for football season, and we'll be back before you know it.
Yep, we'll be back we'll go to the summer schedule now. So every other week, be looking out for a podcast. We'll be covering summer camp as they come in. When LSU gets to summer camp and they got their canoes and they got their campfires and they're doing, that kind of summer stuff. Then fall camp, that's when they're, I don't know, maybe looking at the leaves. It's there's a lot of camping going on. we'll be covering it.
Yes, we will. With smiles on our faces and tears in our eyes. I think that'll do it for us here on Talking Tigs. Tune in next time, which will be in a couple of weeks. We will have probably, if not a refresher on the College World Series. I don't know. It might be all done by then. Maybe the weekend after that. Either way, we'll have some follow up on the College World Series, as well as any other recruiting news and Jay Johnson's success in the transfer portal. Whatever it may be, we will have it here for you. So until then, stay safe, stay tuned, and we will talk to you next time right here on Talking Tigs.